So we have to understand what meditation is. Gautam Buddha, the founder of Zen, the founder of all great meditative techniques in the world, defines it in one word. Somebody asked him, Bhante, Bhagwan, what is meditation? What it is all about? And Gautam Buddha said a single word. He said, halt. That was his definition of meditation. He says, if it halts, it is meditation. The full sentence is, the mad mind does not halt. If it halts, it is meditation. The mad mind does not halt. If it halts, it is meditation. Meditation is a state of thoughtless awareness. Meditation is a state of emotional, non-sentimental, non-thinking awareness. When you are simply aware, when you become a pillar of awareness, when you are simply awakened, alert, attentive, when you are just a pure awareness, how to enter into it? The Zen people have a special word for the entry. They call it Hua Tao. This Chinese word means ante thought or ante word. The mind before it is stirred by a thought is called Hua Tao. Between two thoughts there is a gap. That gap is called Hua Tao. Watch, one thought passes on the screen of your mind, on the radar screen of your mind, one thought passes like a cloud. First it is vague, it is coming, and then it is there suddenly on the screen, then it is moving. Then it has gone out of the screen, again it becomes vague and disappears. Another thought comes. Between these two thoughts there is a gap. For a single moment or a split second, the screen is without any thought. That state of pure no thought is called Hua Tao. Ante words, ante thoughts, before the mind is stirred. Because we are not alert inside, that's why we go on missing it. Otherwise, meditation is happening each moment. You have just to see it happening. You have just to become aware what treasure you are carrying always within you. It is not that meditation has to be brought from somewhere else. The meditation is there. The seed is there. You have just to recognize it, nurture it, take care of it, and it starts growing. The interval between two thoughts is Hua Tao, and that is the door to enter into meditation. Hua Tao, the word literally means word head. Word is a spoken word, and head is that which precedes the word. Hua Tao is the moment before a thought arises. As soon as a thought arises, it becomes a Hua Wei. Hua Wei literally means word tail. And then when the thought has gone, or the word has gone, and there is gap again, it is again Hua Tao. Meditation is looking into this Hua Tao. One should not be afraid of rising thoughts, says Buddha, but only of the delay in being aware of them. This is a tremendously new approach towards mind. never attempted before Buddha. Buddha says one should not be afraid of rising thoughts. One should be only afraid of one thing, of not being aware of them, of being delayed in awareness. When a thought arises, if with the thought your awareness is also there, if you can see it arising, if you can see it coming, if you can see it there, if you can see it going, then there is no problem at all. This very seeing by and by becomes your citadel. This very awareness brings you many fruits. First, you can see when you see that you are not the thought. Thought is separate from you. You are not identified with it. You are consciousness and it is content. It comes and goes. It is a guest. You are the host. This is the first experience of meditation. Zen talks about two words, foreign dust. And this is just where we would begin our training. Zen says, for instance, a traveler stops at an inn where he passes the night or takes his meal, and as soon as he has done so, he packs and continues his journey, because he has no time to stay longer. As for the host of the inn, he has nowhere to go. The deduction is that the one who does not stay is the guest, and the one who does stay is the host. Therefore, a thing is foreign when it does not stay. Again, in a clear sky, when the sun rises and sunlight enters the house through an opening, the dust is seen moving in the ray of light, whereas the empty space is unmoving. Therefore, that which is still is wildness, and that which moves is dust. Foreign dust illustrates false thinking, and wildness illustrates self-nature. That is the permanent host who does not follow the guest in the letters coming and going. This is a great insight. Consciousness is not the content. You are consciousness. Thoughts come and go. You are the host. Thoughts are the guests. They come and stay for a while, take a little rest, are there food, are for the overnight, and then they are gone. You are always there. You are always the same. You never change. You are eternally there. You are eternity itself. Watch it. Sometimes you are ill. Sometimes you are healthy. Sometimes you are depressed. Sometimes you are happy. One day you were very, very small, a child. Then you became young. And then you became old. One day you were strong. One day comes, you become weak. All these things come and go. But your consciousness remains the same. That's why if you look inside, you cannot reckon how old you are. Because there is no age. If you go inside and look and try to find out there how old you are, there is no age because there is no time. You are exactly the same as when you were a child. Or when you were young. You are absolutely the same inside. For the age, you have to look at the calendar, at the diary, at your birth certificate. For something outside, you have to look. Inside, you will not find any age or aging. Inside, there is timelessness. You remain the same whether there is a cloud called depression are the cloud called happiness, you remain the same. Sometimes there are black clouds in the sky. The sky does not change because of those black clouds. And sometimes there are white clouds also. And the sky does not change because of those white clouds. Clouds come and go, and the sky remains. Clouds come and go, and the sky abides. You are the sky, and thoughts are the clouds. The first thing, if you watch your thoughts minutely, if you don't miss them, if you look at them directly, will be this understanding. And this is a great understanding. This is the beginning of your Buddhahood. This is the beginning of your awakening. You are no more asleep. You are no more identified by the clouds that come and go. Now you know. You abide forever. Suddenly, all anxiety disappears. Nothing changes you. Nothing will ever change you. So what is the point of being anxious in anguish? What is the point of being worried? No worry can do anything to you. These things come and go. They are just ripples on the surface, deep in your depth. Not a single ripple ever arises. And you are there. And you are that. You are that being. Zen people call it the state of being a host. Ordinarily, you become too much attached with the guests, hence your misery. One guest comes, you become too much attached. And then the guest is packing and is leaving. And you cry and you weep and you run around. And you go with him, at least to see him, to give him a send-off. And then you come crying and crying. And one guest has left and you feel so miserable. And another guest comes and again you fall with the guest, again you become identified with the guest, and again he is going. Guests come and go, they don't stay. They can't stay, they are not to stay. They are not meant to stay. Have you watched any thought? It never stays. It cannot stay. Even if you want to make it stay, it cannot stay. Try. That's what people try sometimes. They try to keep one word in the mind. For example, they want to keep one sound, Om, in the mind. For a few seconds, they remember, and then it is gone, slipped. Again, they are thinking of their market, of their wife, of their children. Suddenly, they become aware, where is that Om? It has slipped. Guests are guests. They have not come to stay there. Once you see all that happens to you is going to move away from you, then why be worried? Watch. Let them be there. Let them pack. Let them leave. You remain. Can you see the peace that arises if you can feel that you always abide? This is silence. This is unworried state. This is non-anguish. Suffering ceases the moment identification ceases. Don't get identified, that's all. And if you can watch somebody who lives in such eternal timelessness, you will feel a grace, a coolness, a beauty around him. It happens. The story about Buddha is about Buddha. A beautiful story. Listen it carefully because you can miss it. One day at mealtime, the world honored one put on his robe, took his bowl, and entered the great town of Sravasti to beg for his food. After he had begged from door to door, he returned to his place. When he had taken his meal, he put away his robe and bowl, washed his feet, arranged his seat, and sat down. Go slowly, as if the film is moving very slowly. It is a Buddha film, and Buddha films move very slowly. Again, let me repeat it. One day at mealtime, the world honored one put on his robe, took his bowl, and entered the great town of Sravasti to beg for his food. After he had begged from door to door, he returned to his place. When he had taken his meal, he put away his robe and bowl, washed his feet, arranged his seat, and sat down. Visualize Buddha doing all this and then sitting down on his seat. This shows the Buddha's ordinary life and daily activities, which were similar to those of others and had nothing special about them. There is, however, something which is uncommon, but very few know it. What is that? What is that uncommon, unique quality? Because Buddha is doing ordinary things, washing his feet, arranging his seat, sitting down, putting his robe, putting his bowl, going to bed, coming back, ordinary things everybody is doing. At that time, one of Buddha's disciples, a great disciple, Subhuti, who was in the assembly, rose from his seat, uncovered his right shoulder, knelt upon his right knee, respectfully joined the palms of his hands, and said to the Buddha, "It is very rare, O world honored one, it is very rare." Now, nothing rare seems to be there on the surface. Buddha coming, putting his robe, putting his bowl, arranging his seat, washing his feet, sitting on the seat. There seems to be nothing unusual. And this man, Subhuti. Subhuti is one of the most insightful disciples of Buddha. All great, beautiful stories about Buddha are concerned with Subhuti. This is one of those stories, a very rare. At that time, the elder Subhuti, who was in the assembly, rose from his seat, uncovered his right shoulder, knelt upon his right knee, respectfully joined the palms of his hands, and said to the Buddha, "It is very rare, O world honor one, it is very rare, never seen before, it is unique." The Tathagata's daily activities were similar to those of other men, but there was here one thing which was different, and those who sat face to face with him did not see it. That day suddenly Subhuti uncovered it, praised it, and said, "Very rare, very rare." Alas, the Tathagata had been 30 years with his disciples, and they still did not know anything about his common acts of daily life. As they did not know, they thought these acts were ordinary and let them pass unnoticed. They thought only that he was similar to others and were therefore suspicious of and did not believe what he said. Had Subhuti not seen clearly, no one would really know the Buddha. So say the scriptures. If there was not a Subhuti, nobody would have seen what was happening inside. What was happening inside? Buddha remains the host. Not for a single moment he loses his eternity, timelessness. Buddha remains meditative. Not for a single moment he loses his hua tao. Buddha remains in his samadhi. Even when he is washing his feet, he is washing so alert, so aware, so consciously. Knowing well that these feet are not me. Knowing well that this bowl is not me. Knowing well that this robe is not me. Knowing well that this hunger is not me. Knowing well that all that is around me is not me. I am just a witness, a watcher of it all. Hence the grace of Buddha. Hence this unworldly beauty of Buddha. He remains cool. This coolness is what meditation is. It has to be attained by being more alert of the host, by being more alert of the guest, by getting disidentified with the guest, by disconnecting yourself with the guest. Thoughts come and go, feelings come and go, dreams come and go, moods come and go, climates change. All that changes is not you. Is there something that remains unchanging? That's you. And that is God. And to know it, and to be in it, is to attain to samadhi. Dhyana is the method, meditation is the method, samadhi is the goal. Dhyana is the technique to destroy this identification with the guest, and samadhi is dissolving into the host, abiding into the host, getting centered there. Each night one embraces a Buddha while sleeping. Each morning one gets up again with him. When rising or sitting, both watch and follow one another. Whether speaking or not, both are in the same place. They never ever for a moment part, but one, like the body and its shadows, but are like the body and its shadow. If you wish to know the Buddha's whereabouts, in the sound of your own voice, there is he. This is a Zen saying. Each night one embraces a Buddha while sleeping. The Buddha is always there. The non-Buddha is also there. In you meet the world and Nirvana. In you meet God and matter. In you meet the soul and the body. In you meet all the mysteries of existence. You are a meeting place. You are a crossroads. On one side, the whole world. On another side, the whole of God. And you are just a link between the two. Now it is only a question of emphasis. If you go on focusing yourself on the world, you remain in the world. If you start changing your focus, if you shift your focus and you start focusing on consciousness, you are God. Just a small change, as if one changes a gear in the car. Just like that. Each night one embraces a Buddha while sleeping. Each morning one gets up again with him. He is always there because consciousness is always there. Not for a single moment it is lost. When rising or sitting, both watch and follow one another. The host and the guest, both are there. Guests go on changing, but somebody or other is always there in the inn. It is never empty. Unless you become disidentified with the guest, then an emptiness arises. Then sometimes it happens your inn is empty. Only host sitting at ease, not being bothered by any guests. Traffic stops. People don't come. those moments are of beatitude. Those moments are of great blessing. Whether speaking or not, both are in the same place. When you are speaking, there is something silent also in you. When you are lusting, there is something beyond lust. When you are desiring, there is somebody who is not desiring at all. Watch it and you will find it. Yes, you are very close and yet you are very different. You meet and yet you don't meet. You meet like water and oil. The separation remains very close. The host comes to the guest. Sometimes they hold hands and hug each other. But still the host is the host and the guest is the guest. The guest is one who will come and go. The guest will go on changing. And the host is one who remains, who abides. They never even for a single moment part, but are like the body and its shadow. If you wish to know the Buddha's whereabouts, in the sound of your own voice, there is he. Don't go on looking for the Buddha somewhere out. He resides in you. He resides in you as the host. Now, how to come to this state of the host? A very ancient technique I would like to talk to you. This technique will be of tremendous help. To come to this unknowable host, to come to this ultimate mystery of your being, this is the way, one of the very simple Buddha has proposed. Deprive yourself of all possible relationships and see what you are. Suppose you are not a son to your parents, nor the husband to your wife, nor the father to your children, nor a relative to your kindred, nor a friend to your acquaintances, nor a citizen to your country, and so on and so forth. Then you get you in yourself. Just disconnect. Sometimes once a day sit silently and disconnect yourself of all connections, just as you disconnect the phone. Disconnect yourself of all connections. Don't think anymore that you are a father to your sons. Disconnect. You are no more a father to your son, and you are no more a son to your father. Disconnect that you are a husband or a wife. You are no more a wife, no more a husband. You are no more a boss, no more a servant. You are no more black, no more white. You are no more Indian, no more Chinese, no more German. You are no more young, no more old. Disconnect, go on disconnecting. 1001 connections are there. Just go on disconnecting all the connections. When you have disconnected all the connections, then suddenly ask, who am I? And no answer comes. Because you have already disconnected all those answers that would have come. Who am I? And the answer comes, I am a doctor, but you have disconnected with the patients. A answer comes that I am a professor, but you have disconnected yourself from your students. A answer comes that I am a Chinese, but you have disconnected it. A answer comes that I am a man or a woman, but you have disconnected. A answer comes that I am an old man, but you have disconnected it. Disconnect all, then you are in yourself. Then for the first time, the host is alone. And there is no more guest. It is very good sometimes to be alone without any guests, because then you can see into your hostness more closely, more carefully. The guests create turmoil, the guests create noise, and they come and they demand your attention and they say, do this, and hot water is needed, and where is the breakfast, and where is my bed, and there are bed bugs. and thousand and one things. And the hostess starts running after the guests. Yes, of course, you have to take care of these people. When you are completely disconnected, nobody bothers you. Nobody can bother you. Suddenly you are there in all your aloneness. And that purity of aloneness, that pristine purity of aloneness, you are like virgin land, virgin peak of a Himalaya where nobody has ever traveled. This is what virginity is. This is what I mean when I say, yes, Jesus' mother was a virgin. This is what I mean. I don't agree with Christian theologians. What so they talk is all bull. This is what virginity is. Jesus must have been conceived by Mary when she was in such a disconnected state. When you are in such a disconnected state, of course, if a child enters, he can only be a Jesus, nobody else. In ancient India, there were methods how to conceive a child. Unless you are tremendously in deep meditation, don't make love. Let meditation be a preparation for love. That is the whole meaning of Tantra. Let meditation be the basis. Only then make love. Then you invite greater souls. The deeper you are, the greater soul will be invited. Mary must have been absolutely disconnected in that moment when Jesus penetrated her. She must have been in this virginity. She must have been a host. She was no more a guest. And she was no more clamored by the guest and no more identified by the guest. She was not the body. She was not the mind. She was not her thoughts. She was not a wife. She was nobody. In this nobodiness, she was there, sitting silently, a pure light, a flame, without any smoke around it. A smokeless flame. She was virgin. And I say to you, exactly the same is the case when Buddha is conceived, or when Mahavira is conceived, or Krishna is conceived, or Nanak is conceived. Because these people cannot be conceived in any other way. These people can enter only the most virgin womb. But this is my meaning of being a virgin. It has nothing to do with the foolish ideas that go around, that she never loved a man, that Jesus was not conceived by a man, that Jesus was not the son of Joseph. That's why Christians go on saying, Jesus, the son of Mary. They don't talk about his father. He was not a father. Son of Mary and son of God. There was no Joseph in between. But why are we so angry about poor Joseph? Why not can't God use Joseph too if he can use Mary? What is wrong in it? He uses Mary for the womb. That does not spoil the story. Then why not use Joseph too? The womb is the half story because one egg from the mother has been used. Then why not use another egg from Joseph? Why be so angry at this poor carpenter? No, God uses both. But the state of consciousness must have been of the host. And really, when you are the host, there is no wonder if you receive the greatest guest. Jesus comes in. If you are disidentified of all the guests, then God becomes your guest. First you become the host, pure host, then God becomes your guest. When you are disconnected, you in yourself. Now ask yourself, what is this you in yourself? You can never answer this question. It is unanswerable because it is cut off from all knowable relationships. This way one stumbles upon the unknowable. This is entering into meditation. When you have become settled into it, utterly settled, it becomes samadhi.